Hello and welcome to Books on the Go, a podcast where we talk about our book of the week. I'm Anna Bailey Carris and I'm here with Annie Waters. Hi, Annie.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very good. And this week we've been reading Weather by Jenny Offal. But first, book news, and there have been some more awards shortlists, and one of them in New South Wales, the Premier's Literary Awards shortlists have been announced, and that's just quite a good one to follow if you are into Australian fiction. Annie, what were some of your highlights of that one? I know there are one or two of our favourites were in there. I think The Yield was on the shortlist for Best Fiction, and also I think Exploded View by Carrie Tiffany. So it's good to see that getting some attention, because that I thought that could have been in a few other shortlists.
Yeah, it was,
you know,
quite
late
a quiet
last year.
Book, that one, wasn't it? I mean, not quiet in its content really, but yeah, it kind of went a bit under the radar in terms of critical acclaim. Yeah, well, I know Lucy Trelaw was here for Writers Week. Did you get to see her at all talking about Wolf Island?
No, I saw her at the Matilda Bookshop, but it just didn't grab me. After Ducks Newburyport, it just seemed such a lesser book about an old woman living alone, going through her thoughts.
Oh, it's interesting that The Electric Hotel is on there, because I loved – that's Dominic Smith's second book. Actually, he's written more than that, but he's after The Last Painting of Sarah DeVos. I loved that book in, I think, 2016 that came out. But this one I thought was just a bit boring and slow. So it's interesting that that's made it on there. And I really like in the non-fiction prize, Dr. Space Junk versus the Universe. She's a local person, local to Adelaide, works at Flinders, and she's a space archaeologist, which it sounds like a fascinating job. Have you read anything else?
No, I don't think so. But that will be interesting just to see. I'm quite interested in who wins that fiction one, but I can't profess to have read any of the other categories. And also the Wyndham Campbell prizes were announced, which is a very wealthy prize. I think they receive something like $135,000 each, possibly US dollars. And in the non-fiction category, Maria Chumarkin won for Axiomatic.
Yeah, isn't that incredible?
Which we read, was it last year that we read that?
Yeah, it is. I think with the Wyndham Campbell, it's kind of like the Pulitzer, like you win for a body of work.
Ah, right.
But yeah, that's incredible that she's won that prize.
So that was a great award. And also Yi Yun Lee, who won it for fiction, but Amanda and I read her non-fiction book, Dear Friend, From My Life, I Write to You in Your Life. And since then, which was really beautiful and quite dense, very erudite, but she's a very, very interesting writer, and she has had another one. I think, is it called Where Reasons End? I should really know this.
She's got quite a few.
Yes, Where Reasons End is her latest one, but I haven't read that one.
Yeah, what an incredible prize.
I know. No, it was a bit of good news in a fairly crazy
couple
of weeks that we've had.
Truly.
And Annie, I thought we should check in with you. How is the bookstore going? How's Mostly Books going amongst the coronavirus lockdown?
Yeah. Well, we're not in lockdown yet, in Australia at least. I know lots of other countries around the world will be, but we've been kind of going in stages, and every night I listen to the news thinking, are we going to be closed tomorrow? Are we going to be open tomorrow? But we've been open, and it's been really, really busy, which is strange because lots of our customers are older people, and I worry about them being out and about, and I've had lots of very intense and quite scared conversations this week. But yeah, look, I think I've definitely felt like the bookshop is part of the community more than I have or more than I do on a regular basis. You know, I think I felt the same during the bushfires we had here, that you just realise how much of people's lives you are. You know, I've had people just check in just to see how we are and just drop past and say hi and let me know how they're doing. So yeah, it's been nice in some ways, but I do wish that everyone would kind of look after themselves and take it all a bit more seriously.
Well, it is. It's a conflict, isn't it? Because you actually want them to stay home and yet, you know, they need you and, of course, you need your customers. So I think everyone feels a bit conflicted in that way.
Yeah, truly. I mean, I'd be so happy to close the door and just do deliveries. I think that would make me feel better about everyone else's security. But, yeah, I think things are changing so rapidly. It's hard to know what it's going to look like even by the end of the week. So, yes.
No, well, I think people are turning to books at this time as
absolutely.
Because so many people are spending more time at home, and books, you know, for some people it does give you an opportunity to read a bit more. So that's an upside.
Oh, and I think books sometimes provide comfort, you know, when the world is so uncertain and so unsure, reading a book, either non-fiction or fiction, can provide you with some kind of information that you can trust. And I think that's what we're really looking
for. Yes, very good. Well, watch this space. And, of course, we're recording, I think it's Wednesday today, so this changes every day at the moment.
My God.
So things could have even changed by the time this goes live.
Yeah.
But good to hear that people are still, well, not coming in. Not good to hear they're coming into the store, but
no.
Good to hear people are still busily buying books.
I know.
Which
I'm
is
glad to
healthy.
Feel like
yes.
that it's not just me that thinks books are an essential service.
Yeah. and on to our book of the week, speaking of how do you describe it? Speaking of
end times.
Speaking of unsettling times and preparing for some sort of lockdown, it's quite apt. We've been reading Weather by Jenny Offal, and Jenny Offal's an American novelist. She lives in the Hudson Valley, and she's written, I think, two other novels, and her second novel, Department of Speculation, was a huge hit, and it was in the 10 best books of 2014 in the New York Times Book Review. It was shortlisted for various awards. She was then awarded a Guggenheim Fellowship in 2016, and she writes in a fragmented style. So Department of Speculation, like Weather, which we're discussing today, is a short novel, and it's really built up in fragments. And that one is about the dissolution of a marriage, or the breakdown of a marriage, and it just tells you the story in pieces, but they're so beautifully crafted, and sort of she edits out all the extraneous things so that you do get this full picture in a very short book. And she says about her style, she says, "I have always liked compressed and fragmentary forms. I trace it back to my mind being blown by John Berryman when I was 19. So I thought that was interesting. He's a poet, and he's also influenced many others, from including musicians and authors. And I've got his book, I think it's The Dream Songs, or I could have that wrong. But it's interesting how far his influence has gone, including to Jenny Offal's writing style. So Weather is a short novel set in Brooklyn, and it centres on Lizzie. So Lizzie's a librarian. She's married. She has a son and a dog. And she also has a brother who's struggling with addiction problems, and she's trying to help him. And some might think, getting too involved, but she's not sure how to extricate herself, and she just has always helped him throughout his life. She sees that as part of her role. She also takes up a part-time job responding to emails that are sent into Sylvia's podcast, which is called Hell or High Water, and it's about climate change and is it climate change departure, Annie? Is that what they call it?
I think it's a kind of meant to be just a current affairs and, you know, science-based podcast, but then it obviously begins circling around the same topics over and over again.
And what people will do once it becomes more of a crisis. And so then she gets an insight into how people are responding to this, including the preppers, the people who are preparing their doomstead, or the place that they will go and be self-sufficient when the climate Armageddon comes. And that's just all sounding quite apt at the moment, with people going into survival mode and hoarding supermarket necessities or necessities or not, sort of follows her life in the day-to-day, and you have small moments in her life and then also bigger moments, obviously, when she's looking at information about climate change and so on. And she says, Jenny Offal says about the sort of subject matter, she says, I became interested in why I wasn't more interested. And so she's talking about how we have this intellectual knowledge about climate change, and but at the same time, life goes on as normal. And so on an intellectual level, you know that there's a fairly urgent crisis that we need to act on, but on another level, you're not necessarily emotionally invested. And you know, it's a bit like you were saying, Annie, that it reminded you of Crudo by Olivia Lang, and that had a similar theme with that disconnect between people worrying about climate change but then flying across the world or eating a lobster or having this sort of luxurious lifestyle, but on the other hand they're sort of worried but they're not worried in their day-to-day. So she became interested in that, and she said this word apocalypse, which some people use, felt like it was an overstatement. But then she said once you start seeing pictures like the Australian bushfires that we had in January, it does start to look, what more apocalyptic could it be, so it's very interesting. And Lizzie, a bit like in Department of Speculation, Lizzie is finding that balance between her domestic role and then her larger ambitions and these larger issues. And she's suffering that sort of burnout from caregiving where it's hard to pay attention to the wider world. And so these are the sort of themes that Jenny Offal was exploring. Department of Speculation, it has that same brand of humour where it's quite dark, and Lizzie has a real deadpan humour, and we'll talk about that, some of the funnier scenes. And so that's Weather, and it's been long listed for the Women's Prize. It's been given glowing reviews. So New York Times described it as brilliant. LA Times said it was genius. Ocean Vuong said, this is so good, we are not ready or worthy. And the other one I liked was Ben Lerner, and he said, Jenny Offal writes beautiful sentences. She is also a deft curator of silences, which I thought was a very perceptive comment. What did you think, Annie?
Yeah, well, I read this again this week, and it's been very appropriate reading for coronavirus fear, and it does feel a bit apocalyptic. And it's been interesting to think about, while reading this, the similarities and the differences between the terror that coronavirus has prompted around the world and the action that it has prompted, and the comparative terror and inaction that climate change has prompted. So, yeah, look, I really enjoyed reading it again. I think it's a very subtle book, like all of Jenny Offal's. As Ben Lerner says, she doesn't say lots of what she wants to say. She leaves you to think about it.
Yes.
And so I think it can come off as almost detached, or it's a very cool book. But I think in the spaces between that coolness, you do get Lizzie's increasing terror of the realities for her, and primarily for her son, who is about 7 or 8, do we think? Like, he's pretty little. And her brother, who then has a child as well, and so she kind of takes that on as well. Yeah, I found a lot to like in this. It is darkly funny. I think all the times that I laughed, though, especially this second read, I was also cringing. So it's an uncomfortable humour. You know, you laugh because you can't cry.
Yes, yeah. No, I also found it quite comforting in a strange way, because you're spending time with this character who is anxious, and she's by nature a little bit neurotic, but she's anxious about these things. But at the same time, Jenny Offal's style is quite calm, and Lizzie Well, did you think she was a calm character or?
No, I thought she was hiding her anxiety really well. Like, I think.
Yes, okay. Or possibly depressed as well.
Yeah, I think she's deeply sad. I think her whole life she's been looking after her brother and her mother. Her mother doesn't feature as much, but it seems like she's deeply religious and has been a very needy character in Lizzie's life, and I think she doesn't really know how to express herself. I think especially towards the end of the book, you know, she starts kind of acting out or, yeah, I guess trying to find escapes for her emotions that aren't necessarily great decisions. We don't get that anxiety. It's almost like the anxiety is filtered through the page. But, you know, all of the wormholes that she goes down and all of the realizations that she has gradually kind of accumulating into the world that her son is going to live in 2047 is the year that she
That's
picks
right. us. Well, you can tell by, for example, I can't think of a specific example, but if you can tell by one action, so let's say she buys something, you know, a few tins of food to just start prepping, and I can't remember if she does that or what actions she does take. But Jenny Offal might give you one paragraph just about that, and from that you can glean that Lizzie has obviously become anxious enough that she's thinking about preparing herself.
And I guess, yeah, I think she also, through the book, you get some of the emails that she's responding to, and you get some of the experts that Sylvia is talking to on her show. And I think those perspectives are really interesting. I assume they're all either real people or based on things that experts in the real world have said. And one of them is something like 80% of people don't do anything in a crisis. They just stand there, and the 20% who move live. And I think this book summed up for me, that Lizzie knows that there's an apocalypse coming or that there's something bad coming, but all she can do is kind of fiddle around the edges, and she recognises that in herself, and I think wants to be the kind of person who will move, but kind of knows that she's not going to.
Yeah. But I did, for some reason, even though there is this anxiety that I suppose builds up over the course of the book, and that brings the suspense as she becomes more anxious, I still found it quite a comforting read. And I think that's Jenny Offal's style being quite cool, creating Lizzie. She still brings warmth to Lizzie's character.
Oh, absolutely.
And so even though she and then you are grappling with these issues, it's still nice to be in her company, I suppose.
Yeah, I think because she also cares about what it means to be a good person in the apocalypse, or to be a good person in times of crisis. There's one scene early on where I think it's Sylvia talking on her podcast, and she says something like, the bar for being a good or moral person changes in a crisis. If you're sitting by a pond and watching some ducks in the pond and you keep eating your sandwich, that's fine. But if there are children drowning in the pond and you keep eating your sandwich, then you're a monster. And I think that's a really apt metaphor for, you know, as we watch and the world burns, you know, that we
become...
What's
going on?
Yeah. And what does it take to be good? And I think that's what Lizzie is trying to figure out, both what she would do and what she could do to maintain her goodness and to keep being a kind person in a world that doesn't appreciate or value kindness as much.
Yeah, no, I just thought she was such a great character, and she is very honest and vulnerable about that, but she's also quite shrewd and funny. And so you get, like, I just enjoyed being in her company. And I was, you know, like when she goes to sometimes the library, they have meditation classes. And so sometimes she'll go to a meditation class at the library, and there's one woman there, and I can't remember the wording, but there's a woman who's 6 months pregnant and saying, I can go to the transcendent place, but then I find I can't get to the reality place, and I'm having trouble doing the reality place. And Lizzie just thinks to herself, with the 6 month pregnancy, don't worry, reality's coming for your ass. She's just really dry. It's very dry, but I loved that, those little bursts of humour in it. But really it's all about the writing, isn't it? Her writing is just so concise. It's crystal clear. She doesn't waste a word. And the amount that she can convey just in one sentence or one paragraph.
And I think I love that it's quite like Carrie Tiffany's book as well, in that it's not lyrical, it's not poetic language. It's all quite plain language and short sentences, but she manages to, yeah, choose those words with such brutal economy that even a paragraph can leave you feeling winded.
So there's one paragraph where she says, it's just a single paragraph, and it says something like, the, you know, one good thing about being addicted to sleeping pills is that they don't call it addiction, they call it being habituated. Is that, do you remember that one?
I do. And the
and
one
it
that
tells
I...
you, and so that's all she says. She doesn't then go on about it at all. And you know, you don't really hear much more. We won't spoil, but you know, you don't hear too much more about how that goes, but you get from that everything about, well, obviously she's developed a habit with sleeping pills. Why would that be? Because she's had trouble sleeping. That suggests she's got this anxiety, or that what are the reasons for that? And so there's a whole lot that just comes from that one sentence. And I love that Jenny Offal has the respect for the reader, that she thinks, well, I'm not going to bore you with all the backstory, but you can figure that out, you know.
Yeah, the one that I wrote down was, the moon will be fine, I think. No one's worrying about the moon. And it just gives you this sense of, it's like poetry in a way, I guess, but really utilitarian poetry gives you this sense that the earth is going to go on without us, but it will be without us if we don't do something major soon.
Yeah, no, she's really, but and as you say, it's just so perfectly chosen, each word. So it's this beautifully crafted novel, but it doesn't feel overworked. And that might be because of what you were saying about just choosing fairly plain language. So it's not showy writing. It doesn't feel laboured, or it doesn't feel like she's spent years writing it, but she just leaves you with these fragments, and it's as though she's picked out, she really chooses the scenes that bring the characters to life, and not just in the most dramatic moments, but also she chooses some of the really quiet moments, and from those moments you get the whole picture of a marriage, you get a picture of Lizzie's family, of her community, her workplace, the library, the characters who come in and out of the library. So it feels really real, like you feel as if you're there, like a fly on the wall, but it doesn't, she's managed to do it in a way that it's never banal, it's always quite fresh, and I really am just in awe of how she's done that. It's amazing.
I do wonder how she writes, you know. I would love to know whether she, you know, how she constructs these whole people, and then does she write a bigger, more fleshed out novel that then is pared back, or does she kind of just think in movie scenes almost and piece them together? It's like photographs, you know, that you've just got 600 photographs laid out on a table and you have to piece together the story from those, and they jump around a little bit in terms of time and mood and all of these things, but you get a picture of this whole world that they live in.
But it's the editing. So it's like we consume a lot of short extracts these days with things like Twitter. You get lots of people's thoughts on an ongoing basis, but Jenny Offal has given you just the edited, not even the highlights, but just she's curated it so beautifully, as Ben Lerner said about how she's curated the silences, where you are just left with the perfect amount that gives you the whole picture, but nothing more.
Yeah. I think also that probably comes out of the fact that she's not trying to give you answers. She's trying to raise questions. And so I think she raises all of these questions about religion and science and faith and fear and philosophy and all of these things that we're all thinking about and all living through. And she doesn't say whose way is the best way. You know, her character definitely has opinions on those things, but they're not necessarily the right or best opinion. And she just leaves them there for you to think about. And that's what I've loved reading this book, I think.
And it's lovely, their marriage, because unlike Department of Speculation, it's a relatively good marriage. But it gives you, so she gives you enough through Lizzie's husband, Ben, to have some different opinions. So even though they have a good marriage, that doesn't mean they agree all the time. And so, for example, he doesn't necessarily think that she should be helping her brother to the extent that she does and getting drawn into his problems and so on. And so you get different opinions. So it's enough to make you start thinking, well, what do I think? Am I on Ben's side or do I agree with Lizzie? Or, you know, so it gets you thinking. But as you say, she doesn't judge. She just presents those different ideas. And there's just so much to think about for such a small novel. You know, I think it would pay rereading because there's so much in it. And yet it's not heavy. It just makes you think all the time. So I think one of the critics, someone has described it as joyously hard work. Who was that?
Oh, that's a good quote. I think she says that her approach to dealing with the apocalypse in our world was through reading, and she said that was deeply silly and also the only thing I knew to do. And that's how I feel too, that, you know, I feel like if I read enough about a problem, if I know enough about a problem, I'll be able to solve it. But that doesn't necessarily translate in the face of such huge existential problems. But also the more you know, the better armed you are. And I think, yeah, this is a book that's a testament to readers and thinkers and people who worry, which of whom I am one for sure. And yeah, it's almost like a tribute to those people.
Yes, so that work that you do as a reader, Roxane Gay described it as joyously demanding, which I think that's exactly how I felt as well. It's stimulating in a good way, but it's not heavy-handed. It just leaves it to you. You could read it quite quickly or you could spend more time with it. So I think it'd be a great book club book.
Oh, I think so. Absolutely. If book clubs can meet again.
Well, I've seen a few friends already doing virtual book clubs with Zoom and so on, but it's not quite the same, is it?
No, it's not quite the same, although you can have a whole bottle of wine then to yourself. So whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I'm not sure.
Oh, dear. But certainly reading is not going out of fashion.
No, no, absolutely not. And I think it's that sense of connection as well to other people, and then being able to share your thoughts, and reading opens up your mind in so many ways.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is what we need.
That was a very apt, and what a fabulous book for our times, but just generally, I would say. So Weather by Jenny Offal, we're both highly recommending that. And Annie, I would tip it to be on the Women's Prize shortlist. What are your thoughts?
I think so. That and Hilary Mantel, they can fight it out.
So we could have just jinxed it, but anyhow.
Maybe.
Watch this space. So that is Weather by Jenny Offal. And next week, and Amanda and I are back with Underland by Robert McFarlane. And then, Annie, I think we're doing the big one, The Mirror and the Light by Hilary Mantel.
Yes, we are. I'm 100 pages in and I'm loving it already.
This will be a very interesting discussion. I could have bitten off more than I can chew because I'm a bit further ahead. I'm 500 pages in, but it's still 900 pages long.
It's heavy going.
And Underland is 500 pages, give or take. And Amanda just messaged me today to check in and say, you know, catching up on Monday. And I went,
there's no
way I will have finished Mirror and the Light and Underland by Monday.
Oh, God.
And since I have my new rule of just reading one book at a time, I don't want to leave it half done.
Fair enough.
and swap. So we're just rejigging our timetable. But never mind, it's all for a good cause. So that's coming up in the next few weeks. And let us know what you've been reading and if you're hibernating and or self-isolating and what books are keeping you company. In the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook at Books on the Go, or you can email us at booksonthegopodcast@gmail.com. And what else? I'm on Instagram, Twitter and Litzy at A. Bailey Karras. And Annie?
And I'm on Instagram, Litzy, and Twitter at Mr_Annie.
Fabulous. We'll see you next week. Bye for now.
Thanks. Bye.